The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 11 from the Book of Equanimity. Great Master Yunmen said, "There are two sicknesses that prevent the light from penetrating. One sickness is where everything is unclear and something seems to hang before you. As a result, the light does not penetrate. Another sickness is where you've realized that everything is empty, but you still feel you're in a mist, and so the light does not penetrate thoroughly." About the Dharmakaya, there are also two sicknesses. First is if you reach the Dharmakaya but fall and remain there and do not extinguish your own opinion about it. Second, if you think it is wrong to continue to make efforts after enlightenment and minutely examine your own consciousness and find there is no scar, that is a sickness. So that's a translation of this koan by our direct ancestors, John Tarrant and Joan Sutherland. And it's the one we use in Boundless Way when we're working with koans. But recently we received a new translation of this same koan and accompanying materials from Dosho Port, our dear friend, who went back to the original Chinese and came up with something a little bit different. I'm going to read his version. He calls the Book of Equanimity, or the Book of Serenity, the record of going easy. And this is his translation of that same koan. Great Master Yunmen said, "When the light has not penetrated and dropped off, there are two kinds of illness. One is where everything is not clear, and before you, there is something. The other is penetrating the emptiness of all dharmas, but vaguely there seems to be an object. This too is the light having not completely penetrated and dropped off." Again, the dharma body also has two kinds of illnesses. One illness is receiving the dharma body as the dharma, holding it and not forgetting, seeing it as if it exists. This is to fall on the side of the Dharma body. Another is, even though having passed straight through, you cannot let go. Next, carefully, attentively examine one by one, what breath is this? This too is exactly illness. So I hope that's clear to you. This is considered one of the most difficult koans in our collections, so-called Nanto koan, which means difficult to pass through. And I think you can understand why. And to have two translations that seem to be saying different things is even more confusing, I think. One of the things that's really helped me a lot with this koan is a little comment in our notes from Robert Aitken, and actually it's based on a comment that Dosho translates from Yasutani Roshi, who was an earlier ancestor of ours. And that is that to understand the word sickness or illness as a problem is the problem. This koan is famous for describing different ways that we encounter awakening. Awakening which can be so easily misunderstood, especially in these days. But I guess in Yunmen's day too, there was the misunderstanding that something will happen to you and then everything will be fine. Yeah, and if you have that delusion, you are in good company. I was just reading an article in The New Yorker about the mayor of New York, who says he cured himself of diabetes, and he has been doing podcasts and all kinds of things, and listening to all kinds of podcasts that are available about how to fix your life. It involves thinking certain ways, doing certain things. This is what our pop culture gives us. It's very different from what we encounter in the Zen tradition, where we say every time we have a sutra service, and many times when we're leading sutra services or chanting, that, and this is a quote going back to the Buddha, I am of the nature to grow old, I am of the nature to get ill, I am of the nature to die, and everything I love will be taken from me. And the only thing that I can do is act in a way that is congruous with the teachings. These five remembrances are very much in keeping with what Yunmen is trying to tell us. Even awakening is like this. We have experiences, and modern Zen literature talks about them, but also they happen in the koans, although without much explanation, often a koan will end, and so-and-so became enlightened, period. It doesn't say, and this is what his experience was like. Everything just disappeared, and he was happy for the rest of his life. It doesn't say anything to describe what that was. Because really, anything that describes enlightenment, awakening, realization, they're just words that take us away from the experience itself of having our hearts and minds and bodies open to what is here right now, and then what's next and what's next, with nothing excluded. That is, all of the things that we don't like about ourselves don't go away. Can you imagine that? Don't you wish they would? The self-hatred, the anger, the sadness, the depression, the anxiety, the fear, all these different problems with the body, the reality that every single person is going to die, including you? Wouldn't you like to just sweep that all away? And my experience is that isn't what happens in a moment of awakening. Sometimes it's called Kensho, sometimes it's called Satori. Satori being a Japanese word that that refers to this realization of something that teachers talk about, and Dogen talks about this quite a lot, that everyone is already a Buddha, but they just don't know that they're Buddhas. And the realization is the realizing of that. That you, as you are, with all your so-called faults and all these sicknesses and illnesses that Yunmen is talking about, you are complete, a complete human being. And boy, doesn't the heart and mind just protest against that? It can't be true. I look at all these other people and they're so amazing, and I want to be like that. I want to be like that. One of the things that pulled me into practice was reading a story about a Japanese teacher who was in some city in Japan when an earthquake was happening, and someone else was there, the guy who wrote the story, and he, as soon as the air raid sirens went off, I mean the earthquake sirens went off, he started running down the stairs of the building he was in as fast as he could to get out of the building, which could collapse at any moment. And he almost stumbled across an old man sitting on the steps, not moving. And he said to the old man, "What are you doing? We got to get out of here." And the old man says, "Maybe. Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. Meanwhile, I'm just going to sit here and see what happens." I thought, I want to be like him. That sounds really great. Wow, I got to tell you, in all these decades on the planet, I've never achieved that. If an earthquake happened here, I would be one of the first people, after I made sure everybody else was out, to get out. To be on ground that wasn't liable to an easier death. Of course, in an earthquake, we don't know what's going to happen. I've never experienced a major one. I've just been in some minor ones in South America. It's pretty wild to have to wake up in the middle of the night and find that your bed is moving across the floor and all of the furniture in the room is shaking. I thought I was dreaming, and when I woke up the next day, I checked in with people and said, oh, no, that was an earthquake. Yep. Not a dream, but, you know, from a Zen point of view, maybe a dream. Maybe this is all a dream. Earthquakes, life, death, aging, sickness. We don't know what those things really mean. We really don't. We tell ourselves stories about what they mean. We say, I'm 60, I'm 40, I'm 80, and we think we know what that means. I have this condition, that condition. We think we know what it means. I'm a Zen student. I have had a Kensho experience. Kensho is another word that's used in place of Satori sometimes, and Kensho just means seeing into the great matter of what it means to be human, the great matter of life and death, into reality, into the Dharma, into the teachings that we've inherited, the way things actually are. When some of us decide that we want to take vows with an individual teacher, we call that shoken. It's the same two syllables, the same two kanji, but they're reversed. In Kensho, we see into the great matter. In shoken, we see into each other. And of course, this is one of my favorite teachings in Zen, that we are both the same and different. When we're together like this at a sesshin, we feel the presence of everyone. It's important to do that. It's important to not do maybe our habitual shutting out of others. And it's also important to not just constantly be looking around and trying to figure out what other people are feeling or doing. It's some other way that's right in between those, perhaps, or a blending of those two things. That's why we say a sesshin is about being alone together. And in the moments of Kensho, when people describe them afterwards, they often say things like, I saw how everything was connected. I saw how I was part of the whole world. Shakyamuni Buddha himself said, in heaven above and earth below, I am the only one. Now, it's not a narcissistic statement, and it's apparently what he said after he was born. He walked a few steps, pointed up, pointed down, and we still have figures of the baby Buddha saying this, pointing his finger up to the heavens, down to the earth. In heaven above and earth below, he might have said, there's nothing but this. And then later, when he had his great awakening, after other awakenings throughout his life under the Bodhi tree, he realized something similar but with a bigger impact for himself, so big that he didn't want to do anything about it later. But he was encouraged to teach what he had learned. And so he spent his lifetime, the rest of his life, not teaching about what he experienced, but showing people how to find that same experience for themselves. And that's what we do in Zen. It's, you might say, a technology that allows awakening to be realized. It doesn't make you be a different person. Although you're a different person every moment, so if you want to be different from the way you are right now, just wait. Something will happen to mold you, something will happen to help you find your way. So Robert Aitken and Yasutani say these four illnesses of Yunmen, think about them as conditions or positions or actions that we go through all the time. Even if you've had a so-called Kensho experience that's been approved by a teacher, that's just, as Dogen says, putting your head through the gate. It's just maybe opening you to some way of understanding all of these koans and texts that are part of the Zen tradition, understanding these teachings for yourself. As Wu Men says, knowing for yourself when water is warm or cool. This is what it's like to be a Zen practitioner, not to achieve anything. As my first teacher used to say, you don't have a Kensho experience and then retire and go to Florida, except, well, I guess Jeannie's an exception. She lives in Florida half the year. But this, and I guess Florida now, that was, I don't know, 30 years ago. I was going to say, go to Hawaii, but I hope you all know that terrible things are happening there too, right? Paradise doesn't exist. I saw an article somewhere before we started Sesshin. I don't know where it was, and I didn't really read it. I just saw the headline. But, you know, there are fires that are spreading through, I think it's the island of Maui, and killing people and destroying homes and farms, and people had to run into the ocean to escape. And somebody said, the delusion of paradise, as the headline, the delusion of paradise, it's not something that exists in the world. Everywhere we go, everything we discover is a mixture of beauty and wonderfulness and difficulties and challenges. This is what human life is. And in the teachings in Zen, there in the teachings of the six realms of existence, the wheel of life and death, the only realm of existence where you can wake up to your true nature is the human realm, just because of this. There are hell realms, and there's also the heavenly realm. But you can't wake up from your delusion in the heavenly realm because everything's just too cool. It's too wonderful. So why would you bother? And so you may recognize yourself in some of these illnesses. I'm just going to sketch them a little bit and not really say very much about them, because we have six more days to explore this koan with all of us, giving talks about some aspect of it that we'll find. I also just want to mention, as I look up this koan, that I really love Dosho Port's translation of the Book of Equanimity, the Book of Serenity, as the record of going easy. To me, that's another way of understanding what Zen practice is. Even though Sesshin is a bit hard on the body, all this sitting, this not moving, maybe not getting the same amount of sleep you normally get, the food's different, you're not in charge of light and heat and wind and coolness. Sitting, 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 walking, walking, walking. All the things that we do here together, they're challenging. But what if we saw them as not so difficult? Not difficult compared with everything else that we human beings encounter. Just another version of certain ways of understanding life. So going easy. Going easy. Not working so hard. Not protesting and not enjoying to the point of not seeing. But all of these things together, all of these things are part of the same practice that we're doing here. Everything is part of awakening, with no exceptions. So, first Yunmen describes the first sickness. There are two sicknesses that prevent the light from penetrating. So again, if you think of these as two conditions that prevent the light from penetrating. One is where everything is unclear and something seems to hang before you. As a result, the light does not penetrate. And the other translation of that, when the light has not penetrated and dropped off, everything is not clear, and before you there is something. This is something that I hope is familiar to you. It may be what brought you to Zen in the first place. this feeling that there's something that is right in front of you, but you can't find it. You search for it. You look for it. The light, which is Yunmen's way of talking about this awakened heart, the true nature of a person. So interesting, so tantalizing. It draws us in, but we can't see it. We can't see it. So if Aitken and Yasutani call this a condition, that's an easier way to understand it. It's not problematic, although we may suffer when we're in it. But we suffer when we're in every condition, so this one isn't special. And then the second one, where you've realized that everything is empty. Maybe you've been doing some reading, or you've been sitting, or maybe everything dropped away in front of you. But in this condition, you're still in a mist. In other words, it hasn't cleared up yet. It's not perceivable, perceptible, whatever it is, this awakened nature of all things. And so the light doesn't penetrate thoroughly. This is like these moments we have, and both of these conditions happen a lot during Sesshin, by the way. So in a way, I'm giving you a bit of a roadmap, a way of talking about these things, a way of putting words on experiences that really can't be talked about. And yet, we find a way to communicate with each other about them. So everything is in a mist, and you just can't see anything, and something is right before you. Or you get it. You get what emptiness is. You get what thusness is, what the absolute is. And yet still, the light doesn't penetrate. You feel like you're in a mist. But then, Yunmen talks about two other conditions, two other illnesses or sicknesses that are about what happens when you realize the Dharma Kaya, the body of the Dharma. Kaya means body in Sanskrit. And Dharma, of course, means so many things. It means reality, the way things are, the teachings of the ancestors. We take refuge in all these things when we say we take refuge in the Dharma. And the first problem, the first condition, the first sickness, the first normal thing that happens to people, according to Yunmen, is reaching this state of the Dharma in your body, completely penetrating your body. There's no more any kind of separation, this realization of the Dharma Kaya, but you fall and remain there. This is such a common thing. Boy, do I know this one really, really well. This is the delusion that you're done. Time to retire and go, well, where? No place. No place is safe from difficulties. But there is this idea that we have when we've tasted this for ourselves, when we've realized it, we just want to stay here forever. And we don't extinguish our own opinion about it. It's one of the things I really like about this translation from Tarrant and Sutherland. We don't extinguish our own opinion about it. This is where we go around saying, you know, I'm not supposed to talk about this, but I had a kensho. Or, you know, look at me, you know, just maybe presenting yourself as some kind of a person of the way, which is the opposite of what a person of the way might do. Returning to the marketplace with bliss-bestowing hands, going through all that, nothing to prove, nothing to show, just waking up, going to the bathroom, getting dressed, eating breakfast, etc. That's all. It's nothing special. If you're looking for something special, well, I don't know where you'd find that. Florida? Maui? I don't think so. Some idea of not feeling anything anymore, that's a good one. I will just let go of all my emotions. My understanding of that man sitting in the middle of the earthquake was diluted because I don't know what he was thinking, and the guy who wrote the story about him didn't know what he was thinking. He might have been so scared that he couldn't move. We don't know, but we certainly do project ideas about what it might be like to no longer be subject to all of our difficult emotions, difficult thinking patterns. And then there's the last one, and we found out that we actually had a mistaken translation which had a double negative in it, so we fixed it the other night. If you think it's wrong to continue to make efforts after enlightenment, in other words, that's that feeling about being all done, and minutely examine your own consciousness and find there's no scar, that's a sickness. So what is this minutely examining your own consciousness and finding there's no scar? It's rejecting any part of yourself that is connected to being human. This is a very tricky sickness, a tricky condition. I know people who say after they have some kensho, well, you know what, I'm done and I've stopped dreaming and I don't think about things anymore, my mind is empty. I don't believe it, because that's never been proved to be the case for more than a short, short period of time. All of us are subject to aging, to sickness, to death, to separation. There are no exceptions. So who is the person who refuses to see their own scars? The scars themselves are the awakened heart showing up as scars. The hurtful actions, the ways that we encounter the world and other people, and then later we go, oh, no, what David's teacher George Bowman used to call the cringe moments. They are the awakened heart too. There really are no exceptions. And of course, as my first teacher, Richard Clark, used to say over and over again, don't believe me. I'm just pointing to something here. This whole practice, the reason you're here for 7 days, is so that you can discover this for yourself in good company with the guidance of people who care so much about the Dharma that we want to share what we have discovered with you and then see how it's arising in your own hearts and minds and bodies and become motivated all over again. This mutuality of awakening together. This doesn't happen alone, really. It happens with everything. It happens inside the way that the practice is structured. It happens with bowing, with playing bells, with feeling pain in the knees and ankles and back. It happens with simply being human and recognizing that there's no other place. There's nowhere to go. Everything we've been looking for is here. Great Master Yun Men said there are two sicknesses that prevent the light from penetrating. One sickness is where everything is unclear and something seems to hang before you. As a result, the light does not penetrate. Another sickness is where you have realized that everything is empty, but you still feel you're in a mist, and so the light does not penetrate thoroughly. About the Dharmakaya, there are also two sicknesses. First is if you reach the Dharmakaya, but fall and remain there, and do not extinguish your own opinion about it. Second, if you think it's wrong to continue to make efforts after enlightenment and minutely examine your own consciousness and find there is no scar, that is a sickness. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll make a semicircle again. The people on the end can come in. So we'll have an opportunity now for Dharma dialogue. Jenny already has her hand up.
Yes, when you said, if you think you're going to have Kensho and then everything will be fine, and I was thinking of that that internet meme that has a cartoon dog sitting at a table in a room that's engulfed in flames, and the little speech bubble says, "This is fine." And I guess that, I really like that meme, and I guess it feels like that meme is accusing us of like spiritual bypassing, and I guess, I mean, there's a way like, isn't everything fine, really? And also, everything's fine, but there are fires to put out, and dogs to rescue, and dinner to be made, and yeah.
Well said, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, Yunmen himself said, every day is a fine day.
Yeah.
So what? So it's very important to add that other piece that you just added. There are fires to put out.
Yeah.
There are dogs to rescue.
And I love this. Of course, it's how do we hold two things that are mutually exclusive? All right, you think, well, you know, just tell me, no more Zen bullshit. Is it this or is it that? but here we're allowing things to be as they are, and isn't there some way where it's just fine? You know, just ache in my knees, crying tears for my friends in trouble. And if we stay there, this is one of the sicknesses, right? Thinking, oh yeah, everything's fine, because it's not fine. And this is the great wonder of being human, to get to see and hold and live in this world where we care. We get to care. We have feet and eyes and hands and noses. We get to care for ourselves, for the Dharma, for each other.
Jeannie.
I had this image at some point in the talk of when you're talking about the sicknesses. When we come here for a week, it's moving into a very compassionate hospital.
I'm just going to stop you. Can you speak a little louder so the microphone can pick it up?
Should I say it again?
Sure.
So I had this image of that when we come here for Sesshin for a week, we come to a very compassionate hospital where we all get to not only admit that we're sick, but Sesshin, the structure of Sesshin, actually makes you sicker. Really. And being with a group of people who just, you know, you make a mistake, you really screw up, whatever. And that's it. That's okay. It's part of the practice, right? Mm-hmm. This rubbing up against each other that we do here. And, you know, contrast that. You know, I do live in Florida. I have things. People in my yoga classes, ladies tell me all the time, well, I won't be here for a few weeks because I'm having some body work, you know, and makeup and jewelry. And it's like, I just hope the yoga penetrates, you know? And they can see that underneath all the makeup, there is sickness. You know? So I'm so happy to be in a safe place when this can happen.
I once heard Leonard Cohen, who was also a Zen practitioner, say that Zen is a hospital for the brokenhearted. Mm-hmm. And you know, the thing is, it's, we're not curing the broken heart, though. We're seeing that it's just, just that.
Wait, and you know, I think about these women coming from the place of a certain kind of delusion, right? Trying to avoid death. I think their hearts must be broken. I know people like that, you know, and they're doing the best they can. That's the other side of it. That's why you offer yoga to them, because they're not so different from any of us here. They've just, instead of Zen, they're trying body work and makeup and jewelry. You know, we'll try anything, human beings. And there's a certain point when nothing works from that. You know, I had a mentor who used to stop us if we'd say, when we were teaching, is this working for you? This is nothing works. Nothing works. We're going to die. But along the way, maybe we can touch something that's so delicious, so yummy, right? Thank you. Yeah, Will.
I guess sometimes, you know, these cautions about falling into emptiness, falling into bliss, staying there, reminds me a little bit of, I don't know, like somebody's going to Europe for the first time and you say, oh, you must stay in exactly this place. And I've made an itinerary for your mornings and you have to go to the Eiffel Tower at this hour. And in other words, it sounds a little bit like the koan is sequential, is saying, oh, well, I'm only really talking to people who've had a big blowout kensho, because they would be attached to enlightenment. And I guess what I'm looking for is a way that is not about temporal sequence, because that doesn't seem right somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, you know, a few of you will know, and the rest of you, you'll see when you get there. You know? or maybe, you know, maybe you'll never get there, so this koan isn't for you, because you're never going to have a big blowout kensho. You know, see what I'm saying? I'm trying not to make
You're trying not to. Because it does, I don't think Yunmen's doing that.
Yeah.
It certainly appears that way.
Yeah.
I think he's just laying out, so here's four things that can happen to you as a Zen practitioner. And the first thing is the one we most commonly experience.
Yeah.
We're just lost. We don't know. Something's there, because if we didn't think something was there.
It wouldn't be here.
And I really believe, I have a very strong belief, it might be wrong, that every human being has had a kensho.
Mm.
But if they're little tiny ones, which they sometimes are, they just get forgotten.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're exceptions.
Yeah.
I've talked about this before. There's a book I came across when I was a young student called The Common Experience.
Mm.
Which was a bunch of researchers in England who put an ad in the paper, have you ever had a spiritual experience? And they got thousands and thousands and thousands of responses, and they collated them. And it, you know, it turned out they fell into a few different categories, but almost all of them were not such a big deal, you know, or they were in the moment, right?
Yeah.
So for me, every time somebody decides they want to come to Sesshin, I think, or even come to sit. You know, people, the first Doksan, people cry. Even coming in the Zendo, it's like, oh, I've known this all my life. There's something that we've tasted. And then the practice does help us realize it. But it's cyclical, it's circular. You know, I think I've been through all four of those things over and over and over, many, many times, living in one more than another. Right, so yeah, if you can think of it rather than sequential,
mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, more like just Yunmen's throwing them out on the floor for you to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so here's an apple, and here's an orange, here's a bunch of grapes, and here's some strawberries.
Don't touch the grapes.
Yeah,
yeah.
And maybe you've never had those grapes before,
yeah.
But someday you might.
Yeah,
so I think you're really something I intended to talk about, so I'm really happy you brought it in.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't talk about everything I intended to talk about so much.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we have to keep reminding ourselves of. This is not sequential. You know, even with the koan practice, those of us who do koans, seems like, you know, you're getting through, you're knocking them off, 1, 2, 3, or you're not. And someday I'll get to the end and then I'll be complete. No. No, 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 no. There's no completeness because we keep circling around, cycling around, more and more and more awareness. And then we forget, and then we remember, and then we forget. Yeah, and then things do wear out. And this is like Jeannie was saying here at the hospital. This is it's, you know, we make ourselves sicker, right? We provide an opportunity to wear out some old patterns.
And one of those old patterns is they're not talking about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're talking about these other people, mm-hmm. clearly, right? And we hold on to that opinion right. so tightly, mm-hmm. right? And can be so painful. So to recognize that voice,
yeah.
And to include that voice too. Oh, this is what makes you human. You think that you are uniquely broken, right? Other people are sort of broken, but yeah, they don't hold a candle to me, right? And we hold on to this idea, so we can hold on to the idea of awakening that I have it and I know, and we can hold on to the idea of, well, I got nothing.
Yeah.
Man, I'm waiting for the dump truck to, you know, dump it on me someday. You know, when all the time, you know, you have drunk 3 cups of the finest wine in Worcester.
Yeah, and the feeling, I think it's, I realize as you say that it's also about like, well, don't be shitting on the bliss state. Don't I get to enjoy it before you bump me out of it? But already in advance, you're saying, nope, can't have that bliss state.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, sure you can have it. Don't cling to it, is what Inman is saying. Uh-huh. Don't make this all about that. That's what's important. And we do cling to it. You know, that wonderful place near the Eiffel Tower that you just got to go to. Right? It's, yeah. And prioritizing one thing over another. Jeannie and David and I first trained with this teacher, Richard Clark, and I found out after we left him and I started teaching his students who came to me that he only cared about Maha Kensho, big Kenshos, you know, where everything explodes and it's a real clear thing and you're in bliss for a really long time. He did not acknowledge people who had little Kenshos. And I think that's from the training at Rochester, perhaps, too. I'm looking at Deb, who trained at Rochester. That's what was, you know, that was favored. They held parades for you. It was like, you know, everybody got celebrated when you had a Maha Kensho. And that would, and if you've ever read the Three Pillars of Zen, you know, that's a problem. There's a lot of stories like that. But the other Kenshos that have been going along the whole time with everybody, which I saw immediately, as soon as somebody came in the Dokusan room, it's like, well, I've never had, what are you talking about? You have so much insight, so much clarity. Why are you doing this to yourself? It was a real teaching for me. And then I applied it to myself. Yeah, thanks.
So what's the, I don't know this for a fact. This is something I heard through the Dharma grapevine.
Oh, grapes! We warned you about grapes.
that Hakuin also used to do something where he would give you a certificate of Kensho, like a piece of paper that said you had Kensho, and like you just said, like Philip Kaplow Roshi only doing the, you know, like giving people parades and things like that. To me, that sounds like, at least the way that I know my brain works, that sounds like a really bad idea. I've heard over and over and over again this idea of like, okay, you've had this type of experience, forget about it, like keep going, don't hold on to it, don't make it into a thing, and then here are these enlightened teachers literally making it into a thing and like celebrating it and like with this piece of paper that's an actual thing that, you know, so what's up?
Well, they weren't truly enlightened.
Well, I wonder if there's some historical conflation here. Because someone who receives transmission in Hakuin's lineage gets a certificate. You definitely, I have a certificate from James Ford, you know, that this is part of the deal. And we don't know what was going on with him. We don't even know what was going on at Rochester or at Living Dharma Center where our teacher was. We don't really know. Just like I don't know what was going on with that guy sitting on the stairs in the middle of the earthquake. So what we have to do is just see for ourselves, well, gosh, if that was in a group where that was happening, if I was in a group where maybe that wouldn't be for me. Or maybe that would be for me. I want that kind of recognition. I'm going to work really hard and get it. Or whatever, right? All we know is what we know. And history teaches us all these things that exclude so many things in order to tell a story. Really important. Did you want to say something about that?
Well, I just wanted to validate what Bick said, that it doesn't sound like a good idea for you. And if you hear about a group that hands out these certificates, you know, I think you would be right to think twice about it. Yeah, it would certainly not have worked for me.
We do hand out Roxas, right? And it's a tough exam. No exam. But anything, any kind of skillful means can be a problem. Like wearing a Roxas can be a wonderful, inspiring thing. This, I've chosen to live my life. But it can also be, well, now I'm cool and all of this. So how do we use what means come our way and see, you know, our ego will turn whatever into, well, I'm sitting at the end of the row. You know, that means they don't like me. How come, you know, why am I not sitting where Esther is if I was, right? Or into, well, you know, they trust me, you know. So we use everything for the wrong reason, and that's perfectly fine.
And that kind of could be some of the thinking behind all of this, right? Let's see what happens when you get privileged, right? Because we're privileged anyway. Almost everybody in this room, I think, is white. So just to see those things, right? Yeah. And Ray wants to see something.
Well, just to... getting what you think you want, and you realize that that's not it. And only in getting it do you realize that it's not it. But you think it's it, so that's some value in getting what you want, like getting recognition, getting acknowledged, getting validated, and you think, oh, I've made it. But then you get to see the emptiness of that. You know, it's not satisfying in the way that you thought it would be. Yeah. But you would never have seen that if you hadn't been validated.
Yeah.
That's right.
If you found yourself in paradise, it wouldn't be long before you'd be like, yeah, but...
A lot of bugs there.
So, I really don't remember any parades.
Right, you were at Rochester.
Yes, but I really appreciate out here... by taking the precepts, you get a Roxu. Because in Rochester, that was the problem, that you only got a Roxu if you had had a Kensho experience. And so people would be looking around, who's getting a Roxu? And it was, you know, it was this competitive thing, and it was not healthy.
Well, that's in our group, Living Dharma Center, I got a Roxu, and nobody else had one. And it was sort of explained to me that that's, and I was like, me? What? What are you doing? And I felt very, you know, focused on, like, getting what you want. I thought, didn't want it. But also there was this, look at me. When I came to Boundless Way, and everybody was wearing a Roxas, and I thought, wow, a group of enlightened people. Why are they such weird turkeys? You know, they don't seem special in any way. What's going on here? So it is, I found out then when I joined, started working with James Ford, that the tradition in most places is you get a Roxu when you take the precepts.
Yeah.
That's the connection. And that other thing just comes through this particular lineage tradition. And Zen is not always Zen. Zen is, you know, there's just so many different versions of Zen.
Yeah.
You have to taste it for yourself.
I think the Roshi just wanted people to have, you know, a goal and, you know, to feel,
right.
You know, it was just
right.
All about working hard to get to a goal.
Yeah.
That worked great, didn't it?
Not so much. Yeah. But for some people, it must have worked out because some people stayed.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's why there's so many different kinds of fruits and so many different versions of Zen. And because there's so many different versions of humans. And this is, you know, going back to Alan validating Bix, too. This isn't for me, just to know. And this is for me. Yeah. This is what I like to eat. Yeah, Esther, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. So there's something about, you know, that there's something right there that we're not seeing. And then there was the text earlier about, you know, if we don't see the path, we won't see it even as we walk on it. And it's taking on this new kind of meaning for me. For example, you know, in our lives, in my life, I will look for clarity. Mm-hmm. I would like something to settle and be clear. And whereas today I had a very direct experience of extreme discomfort in my legs because mm-hmm. I was sleeping late. And I was noticing, and I'm curious about this whole, you know, where is it that I can stay and where is it where it's harder? And so this not seeing what's right there and not seeing the path as I walk on it, could that be entering into, you know, intimacy with what's right here and that's it? I'm not sure I'm making it completely clear, but it's something about, you know, the path or the clarity or what's right there may not be that solution to something or that overcoming of something, or that kind of clarity, but a sense of the lack of clarity and the fullness of discomfort. And how, you know, can I apply the teaching that this will pass too, or will I move into like straight, just wanting to like jerk out of it?
Yeah, I think it really. I hear you pointing toward the intimacy of whatever it is, and relating to, was it Yasutani who said that sickness is not sickness, mm-hmm. right? It's no, because we say, oh, it's bad if you're stuck here or. You know, you don't see it, it's bad if you, but no. And so if you are in a state of ease, and maybe you might not call it bliss, but maybe it's just sitting, breathing for a little bit, your job is to sit and breathe for a little bit, right? We resist things that we label bad. We also resist ease and spaciousness, by the way. Right? We say, oh, I just wish my mind would open. And then your mind opens. What's going on? I've got some problems to stay on. Right? So we do have to increase our tolerance. And you point to this curiosity, like really noticing, oh, the aliveness of this moment is no sensation. So it's the sensation of no sensation. Or the clarity of the moment is no clarity.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, it's so easy to get stuck in the whole polarization, so sickness and health. So I love the English language with the dis-ease, the yes. disconnect, the this, that, because that kind of opens it up.
Yeah.
You know, what is it really? Yeah. Is it sickness?
Right.
Is it health?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe we'll end there. Thank you very much. I'll put the Zendo back together.